It's time for the one show that takes you where others won't. Out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible. With your own personal guide, the Pilgrim on the 405, Mr. Will Crist.
Well, welcome to Pilgrim Talks on this dark but beautiful day in Laguna Beach. You know, I was talking a couple of weeks ago with a client of mine in California. In New York. And I want to share this little story with you. She has been in various parts around the world, and I've been coaching her for about 4 years now. She was in Singapore, and then she was in Australia, and then she moved to London. She originally came from Switzerland, and she and her husband moved to New York about a year ago. She called me a couple of weeks ago and said, you know, we had this terrible thing called Sandy that came through New York, and it really hit our apartment bad. She said, our apartment's okay, but the apartment house was declared uninhabitable until we get everything fixed. And so she said, that's going to be about 4 months. And at first we were very sad. But then we began to think about this because my husband lost his job at the bank maybe 2 months ago, and we've been wondering what we would do. But we had this big rent payment that we had to be making. And we thought about moving out, but then it was like, well, what would we do with all of our stuff? Where would we store it? That would be expensive. And so she said it finally dawned on us that we were going to get no rent for 4 months. We would have our storage would be paid. And because my business is virtual, she said, I can be any place where I can have a computer hookup. So we decided to take 4 months and tour the world. Well, our coaching call is tomorrow. She called and put it off because they're in Arizona right now on their trip back from California in their car all the way to New York prior to them going off to India and Thailand and other places in their world journey. She wanted to put off her coaching call tomorrow because she's going to take her 501st skydive. Now, that is astounding to move from that kind of despair that so many people in New York had, and probably in New Orleans too, around Katrina, to a place where she sees this as an opportunity for her and her husband to be free for 4 months to do what they really wanted to do, which was to take a world journey. Now, maybe everybody doesn't have enough money to fly to India, but goodness gracious, being freed of rent and the responsibility for all the stuff for 4 months, and then take off and see what you can find. I want to share that with you because that to me is, that's more than turning lemons into lemonade. That is an astounding change of mindset. I just want to share that with you because we came across that on the 405. And today we have a wonderful experience with a client of ours who has some particularly interesting things that he does. Tim Santoni has been working with us for maybe a year now. His office is in Orange County, and they have offices throughout California, United States, and they provide professional investigative services for management of insurance fraud, surveillance, location of persons, identification of service of process. And now Tim is going to talk to us tonight about risk and what that might mean in today's marketplace. So I want to welcome Tim Santoni to Pilgrim Talks. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Will.
So tell us a little bit about Santoni Investigations.
Okay. Well, back in 1975, my dad founded the business, and it started off just specifically dealing with insurance investigations, so losses that occurred out of auto accidents, property loss, premises liability, workers' compensation losses, and helping insurance companies to make decisions around settling claims, pursuing additional ways to collect on claims. And over time and technology kind of morphed into more of a legal support investigation company. About 10 years ago, we acquired an intellectual property boutique firm called National Trademark Investigations. And in the last 10 or 11 years, we've kind of tried to bring all of our core competencies together to kind of provide our business clients with solutions to help them make accurate decisions, mitigate risk, and kind of innovative solutions that come about in the business spaces that we deal with, which is everything from manufacturing, distribution, to the insurance and legal sides in those efforts. And so that's kind of where our passion resides now. And we kind of are trying to work to dispel that crazy myth that most people have about investigators driving around in sports cars wearing leather jackets, the flaky guy that you might see on television, when in fact we're kind of a corporate, legal and skilled investigative firm with sources throughout the country and the world, for that matter, to help clients do things more effectively and more cost-effectively very quickly as we enter in kind of more of a global economy.
So you've moved out of being the gumshoe, huh?
Yeah, and that's not to say that we don't do boots-on-the-ground investigative work, but our intelligence gathering could involve a variety of different things, and that could be one of them.
I'm curious about how has electronics, how has that impacted your business?
Well, as we kind of moved into a virtual world, you kind of hinted on it earlier when we were talking about that story about your client where her business is virtual, and that's the case with a lot of businesses these days. And as they become more and more virtual, they also expose themselves to more risk because the data that they're sharing between partners, clients, and customers becomes susceptible to hacking and theft and replication, which can vastly impact their ability to produce a quality product that's legitimate, not counterfeit, and meets the needs of the client.
All right. So now, does that help you in investigations? Would you say that your investigative process has changed because of what you can do with electronics and communication, digital communication now?
Yeah, definitely. So with the advent of more digital systems, we're able to obtain deeper level of intelligence by masking our true identities, per se, whether it's on the phone or online, and exchange information with people that in the past we would not be able to do so. And so that technology has enhanced our ability, and it also has enhanced the ability of the folks in the black market and the criminals also to exploit that technology as well. So we kind of need to be a step ahead so that we can keep pace and be in the proper conversation when we're trying to obtain information from people that are, in essence, criminals.
Well, in your investigation, what percentage of your investigations have to do with criminal activity, and what percentage would be non-criminal commercial?
The criminal investigation side of our business is fairly small, although there's a lot of criminal activity that drives what happens. So our clients may pursue an action that would be perceived as criminal in a civil manner, meaning they're trying to recover money as opposed to getting charges levied or an indictment. So those criminals I'm referring to, there may be criminal penalties involved with what they're doing, but oftentimes they're brought in to analyze that and help them in getting a civil remedy, which is often dollars or enforcement in cooperation with law enforcement, because the client can often control what law enforcement may do as they enforce, but the client can't control their civil enforcement from a legal perspective.
Well, how have you seen your marketplace? What kind of changes has your marketplace been exhibiting during the late unpleasantness?
As far as the insurance market goes, during the kind of the downturn when the companies in California were closing up shop and leaving, well, the insurance dollars or insurance premiums they're paying out to the carriers also left, and so the insurance companies were impacted by that. And as we know, insurance companies are in the business of collecting premiums and not in the business of paying out on claims and investigating claims. And so there was less money kind of in the pot to investigate those claims. So the companies that were left and insured they've been more exposed to claim and risk due to lack of investigation and claims investigations because there just wasn't the resources there. We also saw brand owners with intellectual property portfolios that were constantly evolving and coming up with new brands clearing those brands and putting them in the market space and those product development, and that also stopped. And so you saw people just enforcing the brands and marks that they had in their portfolio for the purposes of staying afloat while they're kind of weathering the storm. And as many know, usually when the economy tanks, usually the black market tends to explode because that's a period, you know, an opportunity for them to really thrive, and that's what we did see in those times.
Wow. So did that bring more business to you?
It was kind of a shift. While there was more of a black market, the enforcement dollars were still being used very sparingly because businesses were kind of unsure of where they were headed. But we did see that there was more efforts around, oh gosh, those handshake deals and those loans and those deals that we did with people that we didn't really check out. Now all of a sudden we're in a crunch. We want to pursue them and try and recover any monies that were possible. And we want to use our dollars to figure out if anyone that's using our intellectual property improperly, do they have the assets or the insurance that if we do file an action, we can't actually recover. So they're more prudent about how they would enforce as opposed to a blanket enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So have you seen the economy turn around for you?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I think we're definitely in a recovery mode at this point, and we're seeing things change quite a bit with relation to what our customers are doing. Due to compliance and legal issues that our clients face, litigation persists, and litigation investigation work probably is the core of what we do these days, just because in good times and bad, litigation continues. But we are seeing on the trademark intellectual property side, there's some indicators, economic indicators, that are tied to trademark registrations or trademark filings with the United States Patent and Trademark Office. And usually an increase in filings is a good sign for the economy. And in the recent months, the last year, we've seen enforcement budgets coming back. We've seen more clients trying to expand their brands and get back into the marketplace. And that's mainly with our large corporate, may say Fortune 500 type of clients. And I think that's a really good sign moving into the 2013.
Okay, good. So what kinds of things should business owners be thinking about? What sorts of things would they need to be thinking about before they called you or necessitated a call to you?
Usually clients are looking at mitigating risk in a few aspects of their business. So it could be in the human capital side before they hire somebody, as far as an employment screening, and that could lead to avoidance of, insurance loss, accidents, theft of information, theft of, or possibly violence in the workplace. Before they engage with a vendor or supplier, just to check them out and make sure that while they may be offering a good service at a good price, that they actually have a history and they have a good financial background, not a history of judgments and suits. And maybe it's they're looking to expand their brand and they're curious about a domain name that they may want to acquire or a mark that they want to acquire, or they want to know if they can use a mark in commerce. They want to get that cleared. And then maybe after a loss, maybe a theft or an insurance loss or an accident, in a responsive way, to kind of come in and have us consult with them on best practices to, now that the loss has occurred, what to expect and how to handle it, and moving forward, how to avoid that in the future. And I guess the last phase maybe is doing acquisitions and or mergers and looking at executive profiles of people that they may want to bring on as managers in the company from a company they're acquiring. Or it could be even somebody that they're looking to form a distribution relationship with and know the background on that company before they, go to market with them and become partners. So those are kind of it's six areas where clients would typically consider engaging us or giving us a call for a consultation.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you can also help with pre-employment screenings. To see about background, and really it's part of the due diligence that anybody should be doing when they're hiring or entering into a relationship with somebody that they're not familiar with, things like that, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think that that we see that with regard to certain aspects of our business, there's different degrees of risk that people are willing to take, but if someone's driving for you, whether it's a truck delivering product or it could be anyone that would be operating equipment, or it could be people that are dealing with finances, accounting, and especially in certain fields, like in the finance field where they're touching sensitive information, in the medical field where they're touching, and there's a lot of compliance around HIPAA and making sure that those people in there are not going to cause problems later. And what people often fail to realize is that employment screening seems like something that's so basic, but when that key witness in your business saw something that could negatively impact you, and then they get called into a deposition, and they call to mind the fact that this person that's the most reliable witness in this case has crimes of moral turpitude and other things that call into question their credibility, it doubly impacts that business's ability to stave off that lawsuit or that accident and trying to mitigate the exposure.
How closely do you work with attorneys?
Attorneys, we work very closely with a variety of attorneys on a daily basis.
All right. So attorneys would look to you to help them do the kind of investigative work that they need to have done.
That's right.
That's interesting.
We typically work with a lot of business litigators. We work with some attorneys, some plaintiff attorneys in actions, personal injury actions, whether it's a slip and fall or an auto accident, to verify information that's in a police report. It could be to obtain some public record that they don't know how to obtain. And also, we work with a lot of intellectual property attorneys in providing them with information to help them better counsel their clients as it relates to a business decision. So we kind of are in the background, but providing information, extending the resources and depth of information that an attorney can acquire to help his client either make a business decision or avoid potential litigation, insurance loss, or other risk.
You would be sort of like what the police force is to the district attorney. You would be to a business litigator.
Yeah, that's a interesting analogy, but yeah, it's we're kind of running around in the background and providing with that data that they need to kind of have their case hold water.
Good. Okay. All right. So talk to me a little bit about how you go about getting business.
Okay. Well, we have been around, like I said, for quite some time. We exist. We have a lot of referral business that comes from attorneys who refer us to other attorneys. We also work in the insurance industry, so a lot of insurance contracts with whether it's a risk manager or a SIU department, Special Investigations Unit department, would refer out insurance claims investigations to us in that regard. And those are typically like a vendor panel, so we engage with the insurance companies to try and meet the requirements of the panel and see if we can help them on their insurance claims investigations. And now we're actively networking within certain business groups as well as within certain legal groups, Orange County Bar Association for one. We also have formed an alliance with a company in China, a company called Ion Asia, for the purposes of giving our clients support in China and other areas around the world where they may be impacted and those issues impact their business here in the United States. So we can kind of give them that solution. And our partner there, Ion Asia, is a great referral source for business on issues that are occurring in the U.S. for their clients. We also work with, on the intellectual property side, we kind of have informal partnerships with some domain registrar folks who refer us business for the purposes of acquiring domain names that are difficult where we can identify the domain owner and there's a negotiation that needs to take place to acquire that intellectual property.
What changes have you noticed in your business? What have you done in your business to make the changes that, you know, that may had to do with the downturn or may have to do with just the marketplace in general changing?
Well, the marketplace changed quite a bit, and we had a lot of clients that would just call and say, handle this for us and get it done, and they really never questioned cost or conditions or terms. And while we had very satisfied clients, we offer a high level of service, we saw that clients were now scrutinizing over terms and costs and became a little bit more demanding. And so engaging with them and dealing with their processes and learning how to negotiate and ask the right questions was crucial because it was no longer about just the service that you offered. But we noticed that business owners and law firms were very much more careful of budgets and expenditures and expenses.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So have you noticed anything in particular different in Orange County?
I think in Orange County that I wouldn't say it's exactly the same as it is all around the country, but, you know, the same kind of situation persists. You need to be trusted. You need to be competitive in terms of your pricing, but you also need to understand more about what each client's dealing with, because a lot of the clients were stretched, and there's people that were handling the jobs of two and three and four individuals, and so the ability for them to make decisions was impacted. And so patience and kind of assisting them in making decisions was that much more vital, specifically on the legal side and on the insurance side, just because there's just a shrinkage in the workforce, and so it was just more difficult for them and to really work to understand what the core problems were that we were going to be handling and to walk them through that process.
So in a real sense, shrinking the workforce doesn't mean the work goes away. It might mean that some of it's outsourced.
Right, or they're expected to work longer hours and produce more of it. Not only that, is that if they are going to be outsourcing it, they're being a lot more careful about who they use, because they feel like they're on the chopping block as well, because they saw that the two and three and four people beneath them were let go, and so they're very much more careful as to who they use, why they use them, and how they manage those projects.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, you mentioned China. I'm curious, how confident are you about the information that you get out of China for investigative purposes?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm glad you asked, because there's kind of two parts of the puzzle. There's the information that we see from attorneys and counsel in China, and that's one aspect of the information. And there's the other aspect, which is from our people on the ground that have relationships and know the culture and the country and how things work. So the typical perception is that, I can give you an example. So client believes they have a counterfeiting problem or supply chain issue in China. They go to a counsel in China. China sends out an investigator. Investigator does his work. He comes back to the attorney and says, this is what I found. And the attorney says, okay, here's your small payment for this. And the investigator says, okay, if you don't give me more money, I'm going to go back to that subject and tell them that you're on to them and to move and da-da-da-da. And it's very kind of a corrupt situation because of the way that culturally things are set up. When I'm working with my people over there, I trust that they are doing the right thing, and I've seen them produce results because they have relationships with law enforcement and they have relationships with elected officials, and they're able to provide me with information that's accurate and allows me to know that the other information that's being provided is not accurate. And I'm able to compare that information and say, oh, gosh, there's a big gap in the intelligence here, and for one reason or the other, that's just kind of how things operate.
Is that peculiar? Is that unique to China, or are there other third world countries that have similar problems?
I know more firsthand of how it happens in China because it's more, I guess, more impactful on our clients. But I think that anywhere where any country, even say Mexico, where the system of record and the way the businesses are set up is not as organized as we have in the States, and there's cultural differences and there's political differences, that it definitely impacts the way that the information flows and the accuracy of the way that information is passed along.
Okay. Can you stick around after the break and let's have a little deeper conversation about what you're doing?
Great. Sounds good.
Okay. Well, we'll be right back.
Do you recognize them in your office? It's a common problem for executives and employees everywhere. There's John, over there. He just seems to have his own vision. Unfortunately for you, it's not your company's vision. Then there's Mary, who always seems to fall short of what's expected. You've got people that need to turn it up a notch if you're ever going to hit your goals. The never-ending cost of losing people and having to train the rookies. You constantly worry about losing key people you have become too dependent on. Extended Disc is designed for business owners, executives, and employees just like you. Extended Disc provides you with information to make better business decisions with confidence. Extended Disc helps you and your organization to be more profitable by avoiding decisions that result in expensive mistakes, wasted resources, and time. You see the problem. Extended Disc, the solutions you need to push performance and growth. It's time you made a call to Extended Disc for the solutions you need. Extended Disc, toll free, 1-800-257-7481. Or go to www.extendeddisc.com.
I'm Al Strauss with Sandler Training. Talk to you about rule number 38. The problem the prospect brings you is never the real problem. When people have heard this rule and thought about it a bit, if they've been in sales for more than a few months, they almost always say, well, that's obvious. I've had lots and lots of prospects that told me what they wanted, I showed them what they wanted, and they didn't buy it. So it seems that it would be obvious. The problem is, most folks don't understand it, and you get in the middle of the conversation, and here's a prospect who's interested in something, you've got the something, and you just show up. And what you really need to learn how to do is ask a bunch more questions, because frankly, in most cases, the prospect doesn't even understand what the real problem is. And so if you ask three or four more questions about what they claim they need or are looking for or want, you're going to discover that it morphs, it changes, sometimes dramatically. What they end up needing is perhaps even diametrically opposed to what they originally said they were looking for. So ask the questions, don't take the first thing they give you, dive down into the real issues, and you're going to have yourself a much better day selling to this prospect.
And now back to Wilderness Guest.
Well, Tim, so we've been talking about investigations and what that means to our economy here and what that means as we begin to get deeper into globalization. Talk to me a little bit about your business. From a business perspective, what kinds of things have you found to be helpful in running your business?
Oh, great. We talked about the technology earlier that we use to actually do our investigative work, but I would say that overall, from a business perspective, we've been able to leverage some technology to allow us to operate better, provide better service to our clients, and manage things more carefully within our office. And some of those, everyone talks about moving everything to the cloud and whatever that all means, but really, we've been able to leverage some hosted platforms and really integrate our operations, sales, and marketing together in a hosted platform so that in the event that our office, where our servers are, something were to happen to it, really we can be operational from anywhere at any given time, which gives our clients the comfort to know that their investigations will go on, their proprietary data and information, the confidential nature of what we do is protected, so that there are no other issues that arise with regard to those types of cases. With a lot of the technology that's out there, we're able to create kind of our own case management system that allows us to really track and report on everything that we're doing in our business, from our email marketing to our sales efforts to our campaigns that we're running to any kind of even marketing that we do online, and integrate it back into one platform so that we really have a process that works and a system that works. Just relating it back to, say, a year and a half or 2 years ago, where we probably had five or six different systems in place that were not integrated, and the amount of duplicate entry and looking in multiple places for information, and that time lost and inefficiency was significant when you really look at it.
Can you share with us some of the things that you learned along the way, or maybe some vendors or particular pieces of software that were helpful in going through that process?
Sure. So, I mean, I think that there's a lot of customer relationship management tools or CRMs out there. We happen to really like Salesforce.com. That really is a powerful tool that's scalable and useful. what we came to understand is that really the tools are important, but working with consultants and people that really know how to actually customize the solutions for your business are significant. And the one key piece that I learned along the way is to go with the system that is being implemented, integrated universally, because those are the systems that people are going to be writing software for, plugins for. I'll give you one example. For Salesforce.com, there's a really interesting plugin that works with Google Mail, which is called Sirius Insight, and it overlays onto your Google Mail, where we use Google Apps hosted mail, and the Sirius Insight plugin with Salesforce is very profound. It lets us to quickly and easily pull up information and track information and integrate information into Salesforce from email. That's amazing.
Did you know that Paul Ryan is the founder of Sirius Insight? I interviewed him on the show maybe 6 months ago. He's in Irvine.
Right. That's what I understand.
Yeah.
And it's an innovative group. They're constantly updating and tweaking the solution, and it's I would say every 30 days there's an improvement to the solution, and it's a great local company that really doing something profound. That it's not resource intensive. It works well, and it works in all layers of the business, from sales and marketing to office administration to even our investigators. So.
Do you do much outgoing marketing, outbound marketing, I mean, calling people, talking with them?
Recently, since working with Will and Scott over at Sandler, we've implemented a process of really reaching out to warm clients, customers that maybe have worked with us in the past but have fallen off the radar, and also doing a better job to reach out to our existing clients to make sure that they are receiving the services that they need. And get really the biggest shift that we've seen is that really let the customers and our clients tell us how we're doing and use that information, as opposed to assuming that our reports and our services are up to par based on the fact that they're referring us or continuing to use us, but really trying to leverage what they know and let them guide how we make changes and provide service.
Well, there's one thing I'd recommend that you take a look at. It's Shade Tree Technology, and they've created a skin for Salesforce. It might be interesting for you to take a look at, called Insight 2, I-N-C-I-T-E 2.
Okay, great. Appreciate
that. Especially for people who are using Salesforce for outbound calling and they want it to be efficient and effective. I find so often that salespeople have difficulty adopting Salesforce because in and of itself, it can be a little complex and a little difficult to negotiate. But what Jim Banks has done is sales manager for some fairly large sales teams, and he observed what they did with CRMs. And so what he's done is created a skin that's highly efficient and very, very flexible, very interesting. I just, encourage you to take a look at that.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I have found, is that as you go on to adopt different platforms, whether it's Salesforce or some other platform, but my experience is that making the system work and for your employees is crucial, because it's one thing to have a system, but it's another thing to have people that are using it actively and populating it with information that's useful to make decisions within the business. And anything that can be done to customize that and make it more efficient and effective will make it more widely adopted.
Well, so what have you seen as the bottlenecks to adoption of Salesforce in your company?
I think that the tendency is that when there's not an overwhelming knowledge base of the platform, that there's a reluctance to create reports, customize things, and get dashboards and tools working that make the employee or the investigator or the salesperson make their life easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say once they can see the benefits of the reports and the creativity and how easy things are to kind of move around, there's more of an adoption and an understanding of how it works. I think that people are less inclined, that they think that they automatically assume that it's going to be very technologically difficult to understand. And today's platforms are very easy to customize and create reports around that really provide useful information with, very little time.
Well, what have you done to help your people learn that and to be able to make adoption easier or more comprehensive in your organization?
We have some custom reports that we run, but what I try to do is explain to them how what they do drives those reports, and then get feedback from them on why the reports that we're running are not useful to them or what they don't understand. I think that sometimes people do not want to explain what they don't understand. They just want to figure it out, but they never really take the time or the dive to do it. And also, to kind of break the training on what we do into kind of modules, to keep it basic and short, so that the little things that we take for granted as we learn a system that they may not be aware of are usually the things that are holding them back. And so it's not this deep dive into how the system works, but I think it's more along the lines of just little short modules around the basics that are often overlooked, whether it's how to navigate, how to better utilize the system in an efficient way, which browser works better for Salesforce than others. Just the basics.
Yeah.
That's what I've found to be most useful.
What have you found out in terms of browser? I'm curious.
My experience is that the Google Chrome browser for us, as far as Salesforce goes, everything's loads the quickest, mm-hmm. And is most makes it most easy to work with them.
Okay. Well, I'm curious, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 high, 1 low, where would you say you are in terms of what you would like your people to be, how you would like your people to be using Salesforce? 10 is... it's wonderful. Everything is working just fine. Everybody's using it, and we're all happy.
Huh, that's a great question. I would say that we're probably around a 7.
I mean, you can tell me, it's none of my business. Is that 3 points in there, is that costing you anything?
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that. I think that my take on it is a 7, but if I really had a better, clear understanding of how we were using our platform, it may be less or maybe more. Mm-hmm. But I think that the cost aspect would be the inefficiencies in production as it relates to those, you know, getting it up to a 10. Just because there's so many different, there's productivity issues and there's probably increased capacity issues. So it's increasing the production and also better utilizing Salesforce to its fullest extent, mm-hmm. where you can maximize. So. Yeah, I would say it's costing us. It's just a question of whether it's opportunity cost or is it production cost.
Well, is it a little or a lot?
It's probably a little.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that additional 3 points is not particularly a big item.
Yeah, I mean, it's not huge. Like I said, my biggest fear would be is that that's my assessment of it, but I really got down to it, that we're not performing at a level that... that's a 7, you know.
Interesting. Okay, well, anything else that you've done to pull your IT or your processes together?
I can tell you that we're moving towards a paperless system probably in 2013, where we will do away with our paper files and become more almost exclusively electronic in terms of our data file system, so that we can cut down on printing costs as well as storage costs as it relates to our file retention, so that we can keep files for a significantly longer period of time without the retention cost.
Do you have you begun the process of converting your paper files to PDFs?
We haven't done that yet. The question is what we'll do with the old files and how will we proceed as we create new files. So we haven't undertaken that journey yet.
All right. So there's an opportunity there for somebody to be talking to you about whether or not that's a road you want to take and what kind of resources and time it might take, as well as money to do that, right?
Definitely.
Now, have you discovered Evernote?
I have.
And do you use it?
I haven't. I'm actually in my 30-day demo period on that.
Oh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Evernote. Sorry. Yeah, no. I use Evernote all the time.
Oh, okay. All right.
I was thinking of Basecamp, which is another...
Basecamp, absolutely. Well, let's talk about Evernote, and then we'll talk about Basecamp.
But, okay.
Evernote, did you use it across your various devices?
I use it across all my devices.
Oh, isn't it wonderful?
I love it.
Have you downloaded the latest version?
It's remarkable. I mean, in a company meeting, I was talking about how that tool could really impact the way that we deliver investigations, because we're gathering information from so many sources.
Uh-huh.
could be phone calls, it could be emails, it could be online clipping of documents, it could be, you know, a variety of tools. And so that, to me, is so powerful. And I also find it very useful for me in meetings, no matter where I am, and no matter what device I have. Voice note, take down the notes, and it's accessible anywhere, anytime. Really powerful.
I haven't started using voice notes, and I haven't used a lot of video. I do a lot of, you know, a lot of turning into PDFs and saving them, a lot of website, you know, capturing a website, putting it in there, and just typing in text. And then the search is just so wonderful to be able to just pop up what it is that I'm looking for. I don't have to know where it is, just pop it up.
Right. And that's the thing, is that you never know what information you're going to need and when. And inevitably, if it's tied to a laptop or a phone or your servers, that one contact or that one piece of information that you want to jot down, now you've got it wherever you go. And
yeah,
say it's amazing.
I was doing a webinar with some people in Indianapolis a couple of weeks ago. And as we began to put the webinar together, one of the first things we did was we created, well, I guess it wasn't Evernote. We didn't create it in Evernote. We created Dropbox. Do you use Dropbox?
I use Dropbox every day.
We created a Dropbox account and dumped all of our information there, and so people all around the country were putting things in and taking them out. It was amazing.
Right. It's a great way, especially one of the things that's changed, obviously, we talk about electronic documents, but in my world, where electronic discovery, documents are coming into attorneys and to businesses in electronic form, and so being able to share those documents through a Dropbox type of setting is very useful, so then I can review those documents at any time, day or night, and be able to comment. I don't have to go to the attorney's office. They don't have to replicate them, put them in a box. They're all there. Can deal with them, annotate them, copy them, print them, send them wherever, and you've got it. And you can kind of work together on a project, whether it's, you know, a webinar or a group project. It just brings people together and also allows you to, you know, share tremendous amounts of data in a moment's notice.
Well, I remember maybe 7-8 years ago, the prospect of having, oh, what they called shared workspaces, and oh, they were so elaborate. I mean, you brought people on, you created all these portals, and you fill this. But you know what I'm discovering right now is we have shared workspaces all over the place. I mean, I'm sitting talking with, you know, with a friend of mine in Austin, Texas, and he says, okay, so let's just do a GoToMeeting and we'll look at it. Boom, we got a shared workspace.
Right.
My friends in Indianapolis putting together the webinar. We create a Dropbox folder and share it. We have a shared workspace. Same thing with Evernote. It's amazing how simple it is now to create these shared workspaces that 5 years ago were elaborate.
Right, right. It's huge, and it allows tremendous amounts of information to be shared in a secure environment, in a format that everyone can access, open, and it's remarkable. I was just thinking today, actually, I don't know what I would do without Dropbox, just because I'm on the go so much that I can upload files to work on later, I can look at financials, I can review financials, I can create documents, I even use Dropbox to kind of my repository for blog topics and any kind of artwork and logos around that I might need to put on an email blast, a blog post, or a press release. And it's all there in one spot, and no matter what time of day or night I want to work on that stuff, for me, being a small business owner, I have access to all of that in one place, from marketing and sales to onto finance to operational stuff. It's unbelievable, and it doesn't matter what kind of server I have or any kind of virtual desktop or, like you say, portals or VPNs. I don't need any of that.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I was very concerned, I bought this 27-inch iMac because I lusted after it. And when my MacBook Pro cratered 5 years, and I said, okay, we bought it. And then I thought, well, then I'll use the iPad to access it. And then I discovered, you know, when I'd sit in a client's office, I really didn't have the kind of computer power that I needed to produce the material. So I went out and bought a MacBook Air. And I was very concerned about filling up that solid-state hard drive.
Right.
Well, with Dropbox, I have my entire business in Dropbox. I mean, all of my folders that I kept on my iMac that I thought I was going to have to access with go to my PC, they're all sitting in there, and wherever I am, I can access them, make changes, and they're replicated immediately. It's amazing what I can do with that little MacBook Air with you know, it's got a solid state drive that is not as large as you might think you need to have. I've never had any problem. It's amazing. Yeah. Just
I did the same thing actually. Will, I'm a MacBook Air owner myself, and I thought, am I going to get the big hard drive or the small hard drive and a solid state drive that's large? It's fairly expensive. And yeah. I thought, in this virtual world where they're selling, none of my files are going to sit on that computer. So what's the point of having all that hard drive space?
And yeah.
You know, like I say, it's very robust. Access what I need. I can do what I've got to do. You say people that, whether you want to look at videos or pictures, any of these resource-intensive files that need a lot of space, it's no longer an issue.
And, you know, it used to be with doing video was fairly complicated to stream. I mean, I remember that six, 8 years ago, but posting video so people could stream it, that was fairly complicated. Now, well, I mean, you can put it up on YouTube, but you can also just drop it onto a server, and it's there. It works. Click it. Boom. Amazing. Just amazing.
Right. Totally agree.
Yeah. Any other particular piece of software that sticks out to you that would be worth people pointing to?
Dropbox is huge. In our business, I would say that, you know, Google Apps for Business is a very robust way to handle mail at a very inexpensive cost, very expandable and scalable, reliable. And the search features, to me, are amazing. But again, integration, when you're talking about Google Apps or Gmail for Business, however you want to call it, where it's being adopted and integrated, there's so many integrations that are not resource-intensive that allow you to bounce from location to location or device to device and have no issues communicating professionally and accessing the information that you need to, or I need to operate my business. And so,
yeah, it's amazing, you know, isn't it? I've used Google Apps for maybe 5 years now as well, and it just becomes not only more robust, it becomes more flexible and more integrating. I'm impressed. I'm very impressed with it, and a lot of tools out there to make business easier. Well, Tim, this has been wonderful. You know, sometimes we give people the mic for a minute and let them talk. Talk to business owners or people like yourself. Tell them some of the things that they need to be thinking about.
Well, great. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, and I just want to close by saying that the business owners out there that don't know what's going on when they're away from their business, all that stuff that they don't know can come back to bite them. Trusting that their people are looking out for the best interest is a good thought to have, but double-checking it, as Ronald Reagan said, you know, trust but verify. Trust that what's going on is accurate, but just verify the information to make sure that in your heart, you know that that's the situation. And my feeling is that as I talk to business owners that, you know, in these times that we're in, the business model has changed, whether it's a accident, whether it's an employee theft, whether it's a random act of violence that occurs in the workplace. Those things can dramatically impact businesses for years, whether it's from a financial perspective, from a PR perspective, and it even can impact succession as it relates to family businesses that are being passed along. And protecting those assets and those businesses is huge, and that's, again, kind of our passion. We really enjoy working with business owners to kind of navigate those waters and to not scare them, but make them aware of very simple processes that can be put in place to mitigate any kind of risk that may come about, and if it does, an accident or an incident does occur, how to deal with that. We have a team that's available, despite what people think about investigators, you know, pretty much 24 hours a day throughout the world, and are available to react and respond quickly and effectively to obtain the information that our clients need. And I would just say that one of the trends that I've seen as we move into 2013 is a lot of the diligence on some business deals and litigation that's gone on has been done with less diligence than necessary because of the economic impact that businesses were facing. And so I'm hopeful that our businesses are not going to be targets for litigation and product liability suits and other kind of brand
enforcement issues as we move forward because of what the economy kind of did to their financial situation and how they made decisions in the prior 2-3 years.
Great. Well, Tim, tell us how to get in touch with you.
The easiest way to get hold of us is online at our website, which is santoniworldwide.com. All the information is there. Contact us. Or our toll-free number is 800-498-1097. And we would enjoy connecting with any business owners out there who are curious about risks that may be facing their business.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Tim. Really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you, Will.
So there you have it. A young business person who is thoroughly engaged, if you picked up on that, with the digital world, communication, computers, how all of that fits together to help business move forward in the cloud, virtual, fast-moving, comprehensive, synchronized. All those words are important. And if there were some pieces of software they weren't familiar with that we talked about, take a look at them, because that's the future, and the future is now. So this is the Pilgrim on the 405 saying, enjoyed talking with you today. Look forward to talking with you again next week. If you have somebody that you think might be interested in speaking with us, have some interesting stories to tell, give me a call, 949-355-6013, or email me, willchrist@willchrist.com. I'd love to talk with you. So this is the Pilgrim on the 405 saying, make it a great day. Look forward to talking with you next week.
You've been listening to one show that takes you where others won't, out into the wilderness, past the frontiers of what you thought was possible, with your own personal guide, The Pilgrim, on the 405.